Welcome to MidEcon, a podcast that highlights work done by students and faculty in the Economics Department at Middlebury College. I'm Eric Gong, a professor in the department, and I'll be your host for this episode. My guest for this episode is Emily Fox. Emily is class of 2025 and did a fascinating thesis that examines the impacts of school shootings on the wider community. I was fortunate to serve as Emily's thesis advisor and was most impressed by her adaptability. Early on in her thesis, Emily discovered that she would not be able to pursue her original idea, but she was able to quickly pivot to a new project. I asked Emily to join me to discuss her thesis, as well as musings of her time at Middlebury. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Hi, Emily Fox. Welcome. I would love for you to tell us about your thesis, but before that, could you tell us a little bit about how you ended up at Middlebury?
Yeah, of course. So I started looking at colleges right during COVID, so that definitely kind of affected my choice. I wasn't able to see as many places as I had hoped. I was looking at some schools in California, but that kind of knocked it off. And a big piece of my college search was also I wanted to swim in college. So all the NESCACs were like a perfect fit in the conference with academics. It was just a good fit overall. So that's how I really honed in on Middlebury. And I just really loved the coach and our team. And I applied early decision and I've loved it here.
Well, that's great. We love having you here. Did you start Middlebury during the pandemic?
Everyone will say that like the year before that came in, like when the class of 2020 from high school came in, they had to wear masks all the time. I believe they had like a rule, like only two people in a dorm room. So when my year came in, it wasn't like that. We only had to wear masks in class. We could have parties and all that, but it was definitely still a little weird, like especially in J term. At one point, the dining hall shut down totally. And I was on the swim team. So our coach said, we can't go to the dining halls even when they reopen. So I had to like eat my room for like 3 months during our championship season, which was a bummer. So still a little bit COVID weird, but not as bad as some years.
Yeah. I'm so glad we're out of that period right now. You can kind of like just experience college during normal periods.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really lucky. I'm glad I wasn't like in college during COVID.
So Emily, you are an econ major. Why? Why are you an econ major?
Yeah. So coming to a liberal arts college, I really wanted to try to double major in two very different things. So I'm also a history major and I've always been much better at writing and reading. Like in high school, I really focused on taking APs in that. I was never good at math. I'm still really bad at math, but I really liked the balance at Middlebury of taking econ classes. There's a bit of word problems. There's a bit of math, just different skills than I would take in like a history course. So it's a nice break from like reading and writing all the time. So I really like the balance of econ and history as two majors.
So I have a confession to make. I'm not so great at math either.
Yeah.
But so what did you think about econ sort of like when you first got here, and how has your perceptions of econ changed since your time here?
Yeah, I definitely like it a lot more now. The intro classes are definitely, you know, crucial to take. Like you can't skip intro micro or intro macro, but to me, they weren't as interesting as some of the higher level electives I've taken where we actually get to read a lot of research papers, try to do our own research. And then especially like this thesis has been like the culmination of the entire major, which I think was a really great opportunity that I was able to do this. So I definitely say I've liked it a lot more when it's more kind of like independent research, reading papers, not so much those models. I don't like those as much, but that's more math focused as well.
Yeah. So maybe would your advice then be to say first or second year students who are like perhaps struggling with the intro classes just to hang in there and you can start to apply a lot of those tools and concepts like in your third and fourth year?
Yeah, for sure. Especially like my grades in the intro classes were a bit of a GPA push down, but I still like persevered through them because I knew that some of the later classes looked really interesting on course registration and I wanted to take those. So definitely sticking through it is a good idea.
Yeah. And
Like, what type of student do you think would really thrive as an econ major, knowing what you know now?
Yeah, I definitely say anyone. I think the good thing about going to liberal arts college like Middlebury is that you really don't have to have any kind of pre-skills to major in any type of major. So someone who is terrible at math can come in and do well in the intro classes. It's not like I had to decide I have to be an econ major freshman year and kind of only be stuck in that one hole. So I definitely say at a liberal arts college, anyone can be an econ major if they really want to be.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so now we get to the exciting part, which is to talk about your senior thesis. You've been working pretty hard on this for the past several months. What is your senior thesis all about?
Yeah, so my senior thesis is all about school shootings and how a school shooting affects mental health on a city level. So I'm looking at a very kind of broad community effect of a school shooting.
Okay, and how did you come up with this question? I mean, it's a fascinating, and yet it's a fascinating question on a very disturbing topic.
Yes. Yeah. So originally I took kind of the pre-thesis class at Middlebury where we came up with a proposal at the end of it. And my proposal was about how anxiety from 9/11 can be passed down to a child from a parent who experienced 9/11. Mm-hmm. Obviously from the sounds of that, it was extremely hard to find data that could connect these points, but I was really interested in how kind of trauma can have effects on larger society, or traumatic events can really hurt society for a long time, even after they've happened. So Professor Gong helped me pivot my idea when there was no data available to school shootings, because it's a similar trauma effect and also an event that can kind of be pinpointed as a time in a study.
Yeah. Do you mind if I ask, it seems like one of the themes here is just an interest in traumatic events and their effects. What led you down that path?
I don't exactly know what specifically led me down this path. I've taken some classes in psychology, which I always find interesting. I kind of thought maybe I'd major in it in college, but I just never really ended up sticking with it. I would say also the 9/11 piece, I was interested in my parents' own experience from 9/11, since they were right by the towers when it happened. And every year I kind of saw how it emotionally affected them on that day, and growing up in an area outside of 9/11, and also an area that was very close to Sandy Hook. School shootings and 9/11 were two topics that really like hit close to home for some people. So I feel like that's kind of where my interests lied, and kind of wanting to understand traumatic events. Yeah.
So it sounds like it's an interest maybe formed by some personal connections or personal experiences.
Yeah. And I'm fortunate to not have been obviously directly involved in 9/11. I wasn't alive and I haven't been in a school shooting, but I understand how traumatic that can be for people, even like second or third degree.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me do a little recap just to see if we're on the same page. So your thesis is looking at the effects of school shootings. You're going to be tracking school shootings on a city level. So say like San Francisco or Austin has there's a school shooting event in a specific year, and you're going to be looking at, say, mental health outcomes in that city?
Yeah, exactly. So this is where it's really interesting, because I could be looking at a city like San Francisco where a school shooting only happened in like 2011, and you can see how the mental health for the entire city, San Francisco is a huge city, like visibly decreases as a result of that one school shooting in 2007. And it could have been at a school of any size.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you're doing is you're not just looking at people who are directly impacted by school shootings, like say school administrators and obviously students at that school, but you're also going to be looking at the effects beyond the school boundaries, like maybe families, family members, friends of people who are connected to the school, but also maybe just people who have no sort of direct connection, but they just live in the same community.
Yeah, exactly that. And I also, during my research, I learned a little bit about secondary trauma, which is where people can have adverse mental effects just from like watching the news and seeing something very traumatic happen, or seeing, you know, stuff on their phone about like an ongoing war or any kind of topic like that. So that also kind of ties into looking at a city, because oftentimes if it happened near you, you can kind of feel stronger connection to that place or the people, or you could just know someone for, like I said, like second or third degree.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So again, just so that I have it correct in my own mind, you're going to be comparing cities that have shootings, like say, for example, maybe San Francisco or Austin or Chicago, and you're going to compare those to cities that don't have a shooting for that specific year.
Exactly. Yes. Got it. So those would be like the control cities.
I see. I see. Okay. How about like the data collection? Was it challenging? making? Can you just describe that experience of putting the data together?
Yeah, I definitely say for most of J-term, my first month of my thesis, I was struggling to find data collection for the 9/11 topic. So I feel like I had a lot of struggles with that. But then once I pivoted to school shootings, thankfully it's a topic that's been pretty well documented. And there's a very nice database online called K-12 School Shooting that I used for my research. And that is a very comprehensive spreadsheet of, you know, all the school shootings, where they happened, exact coordinates and all that. And then the one difficulty I had for data collection is finding a good mental health measure. And I'm using the behavioral risk survey from the CDC. So I'm looking at the number of mentally unhealthy days per month as my main measure. In an ideal world, I maybe would have had a couple more measures, but that's the only measure that I could really track over my time span of 2002 to 2015.
Yeah. Let's say you could redo these surveys, or I'm imagining you as a professor, maybe somewhere 5, 10, 15 years from now, and you could kind of ask people questions about their mental health. I know I'm putting you a little bit on the spot, but like, what sort of other questions do you think would be sort of good questions to ask to try to get a more holistic view of someone's mental health?
Yeah, for sure. I'd also say in some of the later BRFS surveys, they have a lot more questions, but I had to focus on the ones that were also asked in 2002. But if I had to ask more questions, I would ask, you know, specifically, is the mental health triggered by a traumatic event? Like, did it come on recently? How long have you been struggling with problems? Or is it a chronic lifelong issue? Like, some people just, you know, have chronic anxiety or depression, and there isn't any event that caused it. So I'd really want to narrow out between chronic issues and issues that are like stemmed from an event.
Great. Thank you. Let's see. So what is, so you've done a lot of work putting the data together. It sounds like you did a lot of work actually in kind of trying to explore one question on trauma, which is 9/11. And then midway through the research process, you had to pivot, just a lack of data, or it just, you didn't have enough time to sort of dig down. Let's get to the punchline. What is the main result of your thesis?
Yeah, so thankfully I do have a main result. I know a lot of theses sometimes just don't have any results. So I was very happy to find that 1 year after school shooting, cities that did experience a school shooting had worse mental health by a couple factors of days, mentally unhealthy days, compared to the cities that did not have the school shooting. But we really only see these effects for 1 year, and they kind of taper off to, again, the kind of standard line that we were seeing before the school shooting happened in 2, 3, 4, every year after that.
Yeah. So it sounds like then an example might be, let's say there was a school shooting in Chicago in 1 year, and let's say there was no shooting in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. That would be, I guess you would say, your control city.
Yeah.
And so maybe in Indianapolis, based on the survey, people on average have like 3 mental health days. So 3 days out of 30 that they're feeling not so great. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like then in Chicago, the city that did have a shooting, that would increase.
It would increase, okay. But only for that 1 year after. But this is, again, interesting to see because a city is very big, mm-hmm. and a school shooting is kind of one concentrated event. So even to see any increase, I feel like is pretty significant.
Yeah. Do you happen to recall like the magnitude 1 year? So again, let's just make sure I understand. Say in 2011, Chicago has a shooting, Indianapolis doesn't. 1 year after, so in 2012, the average number of bad mental health days might be like 3 in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And so in Chicago, what would that effect look like? Would it be like 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, it's mainly more like 2 or 3 more. So it's not a massive jump. It's not like 10 more, like 2 weeks more, but it's still, compared to how you can kind of see like the event study trending beforehand, to jump.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so like maybe 5 days in Indianapolis, and maybe that goes up to like 7.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I guess we could say that any like really bad mental health day could be really debilitating. Actually, on that day, it could prevent learning in school. It could be debilitating in the workplace as well, and in sort of family and friend relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially since this is a monthly level. So if you have 7 bad mental health days a month, that's an entire week where you just don't feel right.
Yeah. So this is really fascinating, right? Because I think what you're uncovering is that while obviously school shootings have a direct impact on at that school, that there are going to be these other effects spreading throughout the community, spreading throughout the city, that might not be as well documented, which your thesis, I think, does a really wonderful job of doing.
Yeah, for sure. And when I was looking into some research, there were some other documentations in like cities where there was wars on like the youth that were impacted from the war, even if they weren't like directly fighting or something, from maybe parents being experienced in that and their mental health kind of decreasing. But I haven't seen the same kind of research done on school shootings in the US.
Yeah. You know, there's an interesting policy implication here. I know that when my children go and visit the pediatrician, they will ask a series of questions about mental health. It sounds like, based on your findings, that these pediatricians might become sort of more aware that, hey, if there was a traumatic event like a school shooting recently in a location, I should really make sure that I can get a good assessment of, say, my patient's mental health.
Yeah, for sure. I know that exact form. I still go to the pediatrician and I also have to fill out that survey every time. But that would definitely be a good policy implication.
Yeah. So let's take a step back and maybe describe your personal experience with the thesis. What was the most difficult part of this thesis?
I would definitely say the coding aspect, just because I've taken classes in Stata, but I'm not super tech savvy. I never have been. And again, it can kind of involve a bit of like mathematical thinking skills that I just am not perfect at. So I definitely say I needed a lot of help with the Stata, but Professor Vong was super helpful in getting me through those hurdles.
Yeah. Were there other resources that were helpful with coding?
I used ChatGPT a lot. I found that was very helpful, especially because sometimes I just didn't remember basic commands like two-way to make a graph and like what goes into that. And instead of having to like go through that massive Stata manual, it was nice just to ask GPT.
Yeah, I've been using it a lot as well. I think it's a really good resource for coding questions. How about the most rewarding part of the thesis?
I would definitely say getting towards the end and being able to look at my paper and kind of feel like it's similar to those papers that I was interested in reading in my upper level classes and feel like I'm kind of making my own research and my own kind of like little corner of impact into the econ research world.
Yeah. Someone described to me once that any research project or paper, like a thesis, it takes a long time, right? You're investing a lot of your energy and resources. And someone described it to me once as it's kind of like parenting.
Yeah.
You're investing all of these resources into this child. And then when it's done, whether you publish it in a journal or you publish it on the web, you sort of like are letting it be independent, right? And then other people pick up on it, they read it, they have their own interpretation. I guess I should ask other, well, it's kind of tricky asking students, like, is this similar to parenting? But I could certainly ask colleagues about this. Okay, sorry for the digression. Okay, what surprised you the most about the thesis?
I would definitely say just how much time the data cleaning specifically took. I know I was warned by you many times it was going to take a lot of time, but I was still just surprised that I would get these, you know, data sets off of government websites and it would kind of be all over the place and it would be hard to even understand what the variables were asking or what the numbers meant. So I'd definitely say cleaning that up took the most amount of time and I wasn't really expecting that.
Yeah. It sounds like then for anyone listening, if they're interested in doing either a thesis or some sort of data intensive project, they should really budget a lot of time to obtaining the data and either cleaning or wrangling it.
For sure. I'd also recommend trying to kind of work out your idea before the thesis actually starts. Then you can really get ahead on that data wrangling, because then you'll feel like well ahead when you get started and you can focus more time on other aspects of it.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Well, Emily, we're getting down now to the final four questions. But thank you so much for just giving us a thumbnail sketch of your experiences at Middlebury and for, giving us just a really, I think, compelling story of your thesis experience as well. Okay, so the final four questions. What is your favorite thing about Middlebury?
I would definitely say the landscape. I've really loved going to college in Vermont. I think it's so special and I'm so lucky to be able to have spent 4 years up here. I like to ski in the winter and it's just like really nice to look out. Like I'm looking out your office window right now and it's just such a gorgeous view. And then also the people. I've really loved my friends here.
Okay. Second question. What would you tell your 16-year-old self?
when I was 16, I was thinking back on this when I was looking at the questions. I was very, very athletically focused and kind of less interested in school. I was doing well in school, but I wasn't really super interested in any of my classes. So I would definitely tell myself to give yourself more time to kind of look into the academic things, because your entire life is not going to be swimming, and you're going to get to college and realize that as a D3 athlete, it's not going anywhere else. And it's a great thing to have, but there's a lot of other aspects to life to enjoy and not to just be so athletically focused on that.
All right. So this is the second to last question. Where do you hope to be in 10 years?
I definitely hope to either be in New York City or Connecticut by my family. In an ideal world, when I have a family of my own, I'll be living by my parents and I can, you know, send my kids off to them all the time for free. I'm not sure if they're going to be looking forward to that, but I definitely will. And also in a career that I enjoy.
As someone with 5 children, my in-laws live very close by, and I agree with you. It is a huge benefit to have family.
I think it's like game changer.
Parents nearby. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I really tire them out, but I think they enjoy it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Last question. What is the meaning or purpose of life?
I definitely say, thinking about starting, you know, a job when I graduate college, I think the main purpose of life is really the people and kind of like the family you make with your friends or with your partner or with, you know, your parents and all that. So I would definitely say the meaning is just to find people and find love, and a job isn't going to be your life or everything.
It sounds like community and relationships sort of like
for
a
sure.
purpose of life. Yeah. I remember reading an article quite recently that said that they're looking at people's life expectancies, and they look at predictors of life expectancy. And I think by far the leading predictor of sort of longer life expectancies is connectedness to other mm-hmm. people.
Yeah. Like that's what brings me the most joy. And I hope to enjoy my job, but I know that's never going to be like my entire life. It's always going to be like the relationships I have outside of that.
Well, great. Emily, I really appreciate you making time for this, and just congratulations on completing the thesis, and best of luck to the next stage of your life.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. And thank you so much for all your help with the thesis as well.
Thank you for listening to MidEcon. Please consider sharing this episode with family or friends who might have an interest in economics at Middlebury. And if you have a moment, please leave a review. Finally, if you have any questions, feel free to email me at egong@middlebury.edu. Subject line, MidEcon Podcast. Until next time, please stay curious about the world and kind to others around you.